Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally, 7 days a week in the United States, and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit the webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the black market right after this. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. The federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American. That's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. Every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Information about you is gained from 63 sources, and all of this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and a very logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all of this information? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for? You know, if you knew how this information was being gathered and what information is being stored and then what information you want to keep personal and private, that would actually put you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy, wouldn't it? Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package, and I'll tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email and send an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the Mogambo Guru. I'll give you his name and number again, and then I want to talk a little about a fellow by the name of Bob Chapman. The Mogambo Guru is located at Kitco.com, and you can download his newsletter. Comes out once a week. I think it's on Monday. Once a week, Kitco.com. The guy's name is Dottie, D-A-U-G-H-T-Y. I think you'll enjoy reading the Mogambo Guru, the angriest man in economics. But there's another newsletter. Costs a little bit more. It's $130, or about the same price as the Privateer. Remember, I've reviewed the Privateer a time or two here on Law Hour, and the reason I do that is to entertain the idea, give you the idea that maybe there's some information out there that you're not getting over the 6 o'clock news or from U.S. News and World Report. Maybe your local newspaper isn't telling you everything that's going on. Maybe they're not spending enough time analyzing the information that comes in, and that's my conclusion. And so I suggest that you subscribe to a couple of newsletters. And if you'd subscribe to two newsletters, you'll get At the Mouth of Two Witnesses Shall the Matter Be Established. And you can get the Mogambo Guru free. Kitco has three or four economic writers that you can get for no charge. And, of course, they're all selling gold and silver. And wouldn't you like to get some viewpoints from other people? Well, listen, you can get viewpoints, you know, from USA Today. And then you can get it from U.S. News and World Report, Time, and Newsweek. And then you can get, so let's say, the Mogambo Guru and maybe the Privateer and the International Forecaster or Franklin Sanders Money Changer. And each one of these newsletters actually has a different format. They'll spend more time on economics or more time on news articles or international geopolitics and so on. And one of them, the International Forecaster, is one of those. Now, the guy that writes the International Forecaster is Robert Chapman. He's been doing this for 46 years. And it's like having a Reader's Digest every week. It's about 30 pages every week. That's four issues a month. It's $129.95 a year. I think for $130, Chapman probably holds the record for putting out more information than any other newsletter for the price per page. Let's just figure it out, $130. And he's putting out 30 pages a week, 30, 60, 90, 120. It's about $1 a page. Last week's issue, I think, was 30 pages or 35, and the week before it was 40 or 42. So I think it's about $1 a page. Now, that's pretty cheap. Now, of course, that's not as cheap as free, but I'm pointing out that it covers a wider range of information than probably any other newsletter that I know of. Now the Privateer is super. It is super good, and I recommend the Privateer. You can write to their news or their email address. It's simple. It is the-privateer.com. It's not a difficult one, and you can call and ask for what the prices are and tell them that I recommended their newsletter. But Bob Chapman covers a lot of geopolitics, news, current events, economics, inflation. He just covers a whole broad plethora of information, and you can get a copy. Let me see if I can get you a name and number here. It's the International Forecaster. I'm looking at the March number 1, volume 9, number 3-1. He puts out four a month, so this is the first issue of the third month. P.O. Box 510-518. Punta Gorda, Florida, 33951. I'm going to give you that one more time. The International Forecaster, Post Office Box 510-518, Punta Gorda, Florida, 33951. Now they've got a International Forecaster at yahoo.com. I'd say that's their email. International Forecaster at yahoo.com. It's easy enough. $129.95 a year. I think it's worth every penny. Now, we've been talking about this thing of the black market. And one of the topics that I get asked about, or one of the subjects, is, can you tell me what the difference between private business and public business is? And the answer is, yes, I can. Yes, I can. Denny's restaurant is open to the public, and they take MasterCard, Diner's Card, Visa, and a Discover. And because they're open to the public, there's an old-timey case that's called Wolf Company versus Industrial Court, a case done back in 1923, and they delineate this thing of private business versus public business. And if you're holding your business out to the public, then you can be regulated and controlled under Hale versus Hinkle and Wickard versus Filbert, a couple of doctrines of law that comes under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8. So Congress can regulate that which it subsidizes. Congress can regulate businesses that act in commerce. Congress does not regulate businesses that don't act in commerce, businesses that don't hold themselves out to the public, and the Gordon Law School is one of those. We're not open to the public. It's private, by contract only. And because of that, we have a special status. And we don't deal in Federal Reserve notes. We deal in gold coins. So when you go to school here, you have to pay your tuition in gold coin or silver coin or wheat, corn, beans, honey, oil, some form of property, because we don't deal in commerce, commercial paper, checks, credit cards. Your checks and credit cards, you can't use them here. And that's because this isn't a normal, everyday garden variety business, and so we don't have a business license. Well, it makes all the sense in the world. Why would you have a business license if you're not open for business? But you see, our Constitution guarantees us the right to contract, and so Article 1, Section 10, government is prohibited from impairing the obligation of our contract. So you come into me, and you say, let's contract. And I say, good. Pitch me a deal. And a contract is an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. Four elements to a contract. Some of these contracts are public, like Social Security. Social Security offers you a Social Security number and all of the 108 benefits that go with Social Security. You accept by signing your name on an application. There's the offer with an acceptance. The time frame is forever. That's until you die. And the consideration is 16.1% or 15.3%, depending upon whether you're employed or self-employed. Now, George Gordon is not an employee, and I'm not self-employed. How do you like that? Sometimes people, they get a little caustic with me, and they say, huh, well, then, what are you if you're not an employee? All right, now let me explain this. Just because you are an employee or you are self-employed, and just because you don't know of any other status, does that mean that no other status could exist because you don't know about it? Well, Kent Hovind's kind of a funny guy, and he's talking to some atheist one time. And this atheist said to him, well, I don't believe that the Bible is true, or I don't believe that God destroyed the world with a flood, or I don't believe that God created the earth. I forgot exactly what the issue was that he's talking about. And Coven asked him two questions. He said, do you know everything in the world? And the guy said, no. And he said, well, do you know half of everything that there is to know in the world? And the guy said, well, no. And he said, could it be that the information that I'm giving you is a part of that one half of all of the information in the world that you've never heard of and don't know about? Well, mull that one over a little bit, boys and girls, because there could be something out there that you haven't heard of before. Now, I'm an old man full of years and with gray hair. I have not heard everything that there is to hear. I have not seen everything that there is to see. And I do not know everything that there is to know. And I'm pretty old. 65. My God, that's got to be ancient, doesn't it? Of course, I didn't think it was too ancient. When I got to be 65, I didn't think that was such a milestone. But I'm down to my last 5 years. I'm only guaranteed 3 score and 10. That's 25,550 days. That's right, 70 years, 25,550 days. I don't know everything. So, and I do know a couple of things. Now, this old, who was it now? I think of his name, wasn't Harlow Curtis now, but Lockhart came in, and it was Supreme Court Justice, I'll think of his name, Oliver Wendell Holmes, that's what it was. It was Holmes' clerk, came in and said, "Hey, Judge, how much law do you know?" Now, that's kind of an obscure question. It's an unknowable question. How much law do you know? And the judge thought about it for a second, and he said, "Well, I don't know very much law." And the law clerk was really surprised. He said, "Well, God, you're the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. You must know a lot of law." And the judge thought about that for a minute, and he says, "No, son, I don't know very much law, but I am God-awful good at the little bit that I do know." Now, here enters George Gordon. "You know, I don't know very much about business, but I'm God-awful good at the little bit that I do know. I don't know very much law, but I'm really good at the little bit that I do know." You know, most people are like that. If you're a truck driver, you know, you might not know very much about selling insurance, but I'll bet you're God-awful good at shifting gears. Probably got awful good at operating a forklift if you're a forklift operator or a backhoe operator and so on. You know, when you get into something and you know something about something and you get to practice at it, you know, you get pretty good at it. So I wouldn't want to take a forklift driver on his turf or a backhoe operator on his turf. So let's think about this thing of public business versus private business. Now, you can operate a private business without a business license, but you can't be selling to the public. Now, here's something that's pretty important when we're dealing with the public. Picture yourself going up to an insane asylum. And you walk up to the fence in the insane asylum, and you look inside, and there's a bunch of people. And so you wave to them, and a few of them come over to the fence, and you say, "Hi." And they say, "Well, hello there." And you say, "Well, I see that you're in this mental institution." "Yep, yep." "And are you people mentally deficient?" And they say, "Yep, yep, we're all crazy." And you say, well, that's good. "Now, listen, I'm selling cigarettes today, and I've got several brands here. Would any of you like to buy some cigarettes?" And maybe some of these crazy people say, "Well, yeah, I'd like to have a pack of Marlboro." And another guy says, "Well, I'd like to have a pack of Camels." And about this time, as you're just doing a land office business with these crazy people inside the insane asylum through the fence, some guy wearing a uniform sees what's going on, and he comes over and he says, "What's going on here?" And you say to this guy in the uniform, "Well, I'm selling cigarettes. You want to buy some?" And he says, "Well, you can't sell cigarettes to these people. These people are all insane." And you say to the guard, "Well, wait a minute. These people, they've got money." "Yeah, yeah, they've got money. And they want to buy the cigarettes." "Yep, yep, that's true. They probably do. But I'm telling you right now, you can't sell these cigarettes to these people because these people lack capacity. These people are all crazy. They're all wards of the state. They're institutionalized. They don't have any capacity to make decisions of and by themselves and on their own. We, the administrators of the institution, make their decisions. And our decision is they shouldn't smoke. You cannot sell cigarettes to them." Does that surprise you? Now, that's where the general public in America is located. You people have social security numbers. You people are under the safety net. You people, when you go to work, somebody tells you what kind of shoes to wear, what kind of eyeglasses to wear, what kind of headgear to wear. You don't make those decisions. The union makes those decisions. OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, and a whole host and plethora of guardians that you have submitted yourself to tell you how much you're going to get paid, how much tax you're going to pay out of your paychecks, what kind of clothes you're going to wear, when you're going to come to work, what you're going to do when you get there, when you're going to go home. All of that is decided for you. You are an inmate in an institution. You have been institutionalized. So when somebody comes into my school, the Gordon Law School, and they say, "I want to go to school here," I have to deal wisely with those people. Very seldom does anyone come to this school who has capacity. These people are all wards of the state. They're institutionalized in the United States of America. They don't have capacity. They have a guardian. When you're driving on the highway with a driver's license, there's a guardian-ward relationship in which the highway patrolman is the instrument of the state in an institutionalized activity called driving. That's why you're regulated and controlled. That's why I don't have a driver's license. I don't want to enter into a regulated enterprise. That's why I'm not in a mental hospital. I don't want a guardian to tell me when to get up and when to go to bed and what to do in between. That's why I don't have a social security number. All right, now, when you walk in my door, you have a guardian called the Social Security Administration. The Internal Revenue Service wants to know how much money are you going to spend in tuition on the school. They want reports. They want information. They want the canceled checks. They may want to audit your records and books. So I have to comply with the laws of the United States as they relate to you, the mental patients in the institution. Citizens of the United States are mental patients in the institution called the United States of America. And French citizens are institutionalized in an institution called France. And so I have to comply with the institutional requirements of France. If I were to travel over to France or Germany, then I have to comply with the institutional requirements of Germany in the same way that I have to comply with the institutional requirements of the Napa State Hospital in California. Now, can you understand that? So when somebody comes in here and they say, well, gee, Mr. Gordon, I'd like to go to work here for the school, I have to say, well, do you have a social security number? Well, yes, I do. Well, I'm terribly sorry, but you can't work here because we don't have a federal tax identification number. And we're not geared up to handling employees here. So we can't hire you. We cannot employ you here. Now, if you want employment, you can get that down at Walmart. You can get employment at General Motors. You can get employment at Microsoft. They're licensed. They're bonded. They're insured. They can do that. We can't do that here. Now that's one of the differences between public and private business. We don't do business with inmates in the hospital without the express consent of their guardian. So if I was going to sell cigarettes or sell anything to the inmates at the Napa State Hospital, I would go first of all to the administration of the hospital and say, okay, what are your rules and regulations? Can I visit with and can I talk to these patients? And typically the answer would be yes, we have a visiting day, and if you've got some patients that you'd like to talk to, you're certainly free to talk to them. Okay, what can I talk to them about? Can I talk to them about escaping from the hospital? Can I talk to them about tunneling underneath the fence or something like that? I think that they would restrict my speech. I think they'd say, no, you can't cry fire in a crowded theater, and no, you can't teach these people how to escape from the mental hospital. Oh, okay. And so one time I had a Jehovah's Witness. He came here, and he wanted to talk to me, and we were chit-chatting a little bit, and one day he said, would you like to come to church? Nice man, and I'm sure he meant well, and he wanted to invite me to the Jehovah's Witness church. And I said, well, thank you very much. That's very kind of you to invite me to your church. Let me ask you this. If I accept your invitation and I go to your church, would I be free to talk to the other people there? And he said, well, of course. Of course you can talk to the other people there. Oh, I said, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Now, is there any censorship involved? Would I be censored in what I talk about to those people at the Jehovah's Witness Church? And he was really shocked. He said, well, of course not. You can talk about anything. And I said, okay, well, that's good, good. And I said, well, what if I talk to these people about the Passover and about the Sabbath day and doctrinal issues like that in place of Sunday keeping and Easter and Christmas and Halloween and things like that? And he paused and he thought about that and he said, Oh, I see what you mean. You know, there's limits on free speech. Now, we Americans in times past used to pride ourselves on this concept of free speech. Well, free speech is being curtailed now. There are now limits under the Patriot Act and limits under Homeland Security as to what you can talk about. Don't you believe for a moment that you can just prance into my school and have me tell you things that you're not supposed to know? When you join the CIA, you sign a contract, and you agree under the terms of the contract that you will not divulge any secrets or any information that you receive there in the course of your employment that is not approved by your superiors. You work there for 20 years, and you leave and decide you want to write a book. You sit down and write a book. You have to submit the manuscript to the agency. They'll read it, and then they'll edit it and tell you, here's what you can talk about, here's what you can say, and here's what you cannot say, and don't you talk about this or that. That's censorship. And it's not prior restraint because you agreed to it in the terms and conditions of the contract. Your citizenship in the United States of America has terms and conditions that are attached to it. And your master, your God, the United States government, gives you certain latitudes. They call it freedom. Freedom. They say America is the freest nation in the world, and it may be. Among 200 slave states on planet Earth, I'm sure that America is one of the freest of the slave states in the United States or in the world. But that doesn't mean that you have total, unbridled freedom. You don't have the freedom to decide whether or not you're going to participate in Social Security once you've accepted a job at General Motors. You are going to participate in Social Security because you agreed to. You don't have to agree to, but you know, once you've agreed, haven't you? You know, once you have checked yourself into the mental hospital, you're now in the hospital, aren't you? You're now a mental patient in the hospital, are you not? Now, people can check themselves into the mental hospital, but once you're in the mental hospital, do you just walk up to administration and say, hey, I'm feeling pretty good this week. I think I'll just check out. Do you believe that? Do you think that once you've been sentenced to prison, you serve a little time and say, okay, I think I'm rehabilitated now. I think I'll just check out. Do you believe that? Boys and girls, let me bring you down to reality. Once you're in the mental hospital, it is true. Once you're in prison, it is true you can get out. But if you're going to be released from prison, you're going to be released. You're not leaving of and by or on your own volition. And when you're in the mental hospital, somebody is going to determine whether or not and when you're going to be released. Now, everybody in America, for practical purposes, is in public business. You have a social security number, citizenship, and you come under all of the laws of the United States and the state in which you dwell. And you cannot participate in private business. You don't even know what it is, how to use it, or what the laws are that govern it. You do know about unemployment insurance, welfare, food stamps. You know about job service, social security, the income tax, opening a checking account, credit cards, and yes, you can probably file and pay your income tax. You know all about public business. Private business is the opposite to that. And you have to obey all of the laws, rules, and regulations that govern private business. So let's try this one on. Let's suppose a man walked in here and he was a common law free man. He doesn't have a social security number. He doesn't have a federal tax ID number. He's not a citizen of the United States. And he walks up to me and he says, "Hey, Gordon, let's contract." And I say, "Do you have capacity?" And he says, "Certainly I have capacity." I might press him a little more and say, "Are you sure you have capacity?" "Yes, yes, I have capacity." "Do you have the capacity to contract?" "I do," he says. "Do you have a guardian?" "No, I do not." Now, you know, when you join the Army, boys and girls, you signed an enlistment contract. That's a guardian ward relationship. You're going to do what you're told by your superiors, by your guardians. When you're in the mental hospital, you're going to do what you're told. When you're in the prison, you're going to do what you're told. When you're in the United States of America, you're going to do what you're told. There are laws, rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices that go on. All right, now with that understood, now what are these privileges and immunities? What are these capacities that we can exercise? How about free speech? How about the freedom to remain silent? How about the right to being private or protected in our person, houses, papers, and effects? Oftentimes people will come to me and they're saying, telling me about the bank and how the bank is turning over records and books. I just saw one here in the International Forecaster about Bank of America that turned over, listen to this, the genesis at Bank of America, at the Bank of America tell us that they have lost computer tapes containing personal information on 1.2 million federal employees, including some member of the U.S. Senate. The lost or stolen data includes social security numbers and account information that could make customers of a federal government charge card program vulnerable to identity theft. Last week, Choice Point, that's a company. This week, it's Bank of America, that's a big bank. The loss and exposure of financial data can be financially damaging. But Congress should end this erosion of privacy rights as more and more personal and financial information is collected and sold on databases. We get less and less privacy and more vulnerability to criminals and others. Let's stop and think about this for a moment, Mr. Chapman. There was a time in America when we had and we valued our privacy. Privacy comes under the Fourth Amendment. You have a right to be protected in your person, houses, papers, and effects. Bank of America does not have any information on George Gordon. I don't have any business dealings with Bank of America. I don't have a social security number, and Bank of America does not have my social security number. I don't have any credit cards, and Bank of America doesn't have my credit card information. Since I'm a Hebrew, I don't practice birthdays, so Bank of America does not have my birth date. Since I don't do business with Bank of America, Bank of America does not have my name, although I'm sure that there are lots of people named George Gordon who have bank accounts at Bank of America. I'm not fearful of identity theft because Bank of America doesn't have any of my identifiers. I want to be private. I don't want to be public. I don't want any of the information that I might give to the bank on a financial statement. I don't want them to have that. I don't want them to know whether or not I'm married, whether or not I have any children, whether or not I'm employed, unemployed, whether or not I own any real property or don't, whether or not I have a job or how much I make, or anything about me or my finances. I don't want Bank of America to know that, and indeed, they don't. I've never given them that information. And I practice privacy and privacy rights under the Fourth Amendment. I value my 10 indici of the Bill of Rights, and I practice the 10 Commandments, and I do not practice the 10 Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Everybody who has a Bank of America credit card, or anybody that has given a financial statement, their names and social security numbers, and etc. to the bank, have relinquished their rights to privacy. That the borrower is servant to the lender, and the corporation called Bank of America is the lender, and it's a corporation under Hale versus Hinkle, which was chartered by the United States of America, which is your God, your government. There is no privacy from God. Now, there's more than one God out there, so you should keep that in mind. There's Jupiter and Zeus, Amenhotep, Isis, Orisis, There's Moonday, Sunday, Tuesday, Woden's Day, Mars, and Janus. There's gods everywhere out there, boys and girls. And then there's the creator of the universe, you know, the fellow that's the god of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's something different than Mars and Jupiter and Zeus. And he has a different law and a different modality of conducting yourself here in the world. And when you practice the modality of public business, and you go to the bank and borrow money and get a credit card and write checks and do those things, you can just kiss privacy goodbye. You're not entitled to it, and indeed you don't get it. The thought that a convict in a penitentiary has a right to privacy is insane. The right of a mental patient in a mental hospital to be free from the intrusiveness of the administration is insane. And for you to join an institution like Bank of America and voluntarily give those people in that institution your social security number and name and address and phone number and employer and employment and personal information and your financial statement and expect that to remain private is just simply preposterous. Preposterous. You're not entitled to it as a matter of law, and there is nothing in your constitution that guarantees you anything like that. It just isn't there. I know you thought it was there, and I know you thought you were an American, and you thought you were free, white, and 21, but that's not true. Now, you could regain your capacity. You could practice private business. You can have privacy under the Fourth Amendment, but not under the modalities that are being offered to you and taught to you in public school. Well, I got to give you a caveat here. I got to tell you that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and that they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, though, you can call area code 417-273-4967. Be sure to order that free General Law CD package. Remember, that's free. And you can also get the same information by going to the webpage georgegordon.org, click onto the email and send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Now, you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, just go to the website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're talking about the black market. The black market is that free enterprise market under our Constitution. You see, our founding fathers instituted a constitutional provision and protection for every citizen, every individual in the United States of America. But they also left open to you your right to enslave yourself if you so desire. For instance, you're free today, but if you want to, you can join the Army. So you go down to your Army recruiter and you say, I'm tired of freedom. I'm tired of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. I want to be brought under an authoritarian system of law called the Uniform Code of Military Justice. I want to be a ward of a powerful guardian who can guarantee to me three hots and a cot. I'm looking for security. I'm looking for a security blanket. I want a cradle to the grave security blanket, and I'm willing to give my life for that protection. And the Army recruiter will say, you've come to the right place. We have just that program for you. We love it. I've been in the military for 20 years, he'll tell you, and I just love the security blanket. And I love the comfort of knowing that tomorrow morning I have a job. I'm told what to do and how to do it. I'm told when to get up and when to go to bed and what to do in between. And I think it's wonderful. And you're going to love it too. If you love security, you're going to love the Army. Sign here. And it's called an enlistment contract. All right, so you sign up. And they send you off to boot camp. And one day the sergeant comes in and he says, hey, you, dummy. Open your footlocker. I want to inspect it. Now, you've been to high school, and you've studied your Constitution, and you know that the Fourth Amendment guarantees you the right to be secure in your person, houses, papers, and effects. And you say to the sergeant, get a search warrant. Honest to God, boys and girls, do you believe that a sergeant in the Army needs a search warrant to search your locker? Hey, it's time that you woke up and came back down to earth. He doesn't need it because you've signed away that right. Now, when you get a social security number, a driver's license, marriage license, business license, you sign away certain rights that you have under the Constitution that you no longer have under these corporate franchises. Corporate franchises. And you don't have to have a corporate charter to have a corporate franchise. You just have to act like a corporation. You just go out here and get a credit card, and you're a corporation, and you're going to be treated like one. And you say, well, I'm not a corporation, I'm an individual. No, you're not. You're now in corporate capacity under Wolf Company versus Industrial Court, under Hale versus Hinkle, Wickard versus Filburn. Boys and girls, you don't have the same rights that you had, and you don't have the same status that you had. So when you come to school here, you know, I gotta treat you people like mental patients in a hospital. And I have to inquire, do you have permission from your guardian to be here today? You know, sometimes you people have been arrested and jailed and you're out on parole or probation, awaiting trial. And then you can't just leave Pennsylvania and come to Missouri and go to school. You're under restraint. Do you understand that? You've got a guardian called a parole officer. You've got to go talk to him about coming to school. Now, assuming that you haven't been arrested and you're not charged with a crime and you want to come to law school or you want to come to business school, that's fine. Now, when I ask you the question, do you have capacity and can you come in here and contract with me? Let me give you a little word of advice here. Let's suppose that you're 15 years old. Or let's suppose you've got a child that's 15 years old. And your kid comes up to me and says, well, Mr. Gordon, I would like to work for you here on the farm. And I say, well, that's wonderful. And I think young people should work. And I say, well, okay, I'll put you to work. And I put your kid out here to mucking out the barn, and your kid's working away out there. And you come over and you say, Gordon, where's my boy George? And I say, well, your boy George is out in the barn working. I hired him. I put him to work. And maybe you object to that. And maybe you say, well, not my kid. You might say to me, well, just who in hell do you think you are, Gordon, hiring my kid? How much are you paying him? And I say, well, I'm paying him $2 a day. And you say, why, you capitalist, you child oppressor, why you're exploiting child labor. And I say, well, you know, the kid didn't have a job and he needed work and he asked me to go to work. Can you see the point here? The child here doesn't have capacity. He's got a guardian. You're it. And I have to come to you and ask you, would it be all right with you if your kid works? Would it be all right with your kid earning $2 a day? And can your kid muck out the barn? And that's where you are. You have to get permission from your guardian. You know, a lot of you people don't understand your position in life. You're like a slave on a Mississippi plantation in 1850. You need to understand your status here on the plantation. We did away with slavery on the plantation and replaced it with slavery to the nation. It's now against the law under the 13th Amendment for private parties, private persons to own slaves. But everybody in America comes under the bondservant statute, the guardian-ward relationship, which is distinguished from freedom or capacity with your Social Security or your business license. You need a job? Well, then you go to job service, and job service gets you a job, and I want to hire you, and if I want to hire you, I have to pay your master's rent, which is 16% of what I pay you, and your master requires that I pay you a minimum wage of $5 an hour. You don't have capacity. You cannot work for me for $3 an hour. You couldn't come in here and work for me without paying Social Security. Whether you like it or not, I have to contract with your guardian. I just go right over your head. I say, well, wait a minute here, son. You don't have capacity. I have to deal with your guardian at Social Security. I have to deal with your guardian at the IRS. I have to deal with your guardian at the job service. Starting to get the drift of things? Private business is that form of a business that you have capacity and you can contract and that you can deal in substance. You people don't even deal in substance. You haven't been paid, most of you, in your entire lives. You have been discharged in equity. And that's what brings us to unjust weights and balances. When God told us not to deal in unjust weights and balances in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36, and Deuteronomy 25, 13 through 16, he wasn't whistling Dixie through a straw hat. And there's a difference between being discharged and being paid. When we deal in private business, we deal in payment, in substance. When we deal in commercial business, when we deal in public business, we deal in commercial paper, Federal Reserve notes, checks and credit cards. We deal in discharge rather than payment. Now, when you're dealing in discharge, you're not dealing in substance. You deal under a different law. It's called the Roman Civil Law. If you want to practice your Constitution and Bill of Rights, you certainly can do that. But you can't do that while you're a member of the armed services. You cannot do that as a member of Social Security. You can't do that with a driver's license, a business license, or some other prior restraint. And that's just where reality is at. Now, oftentimes when I read these newsletters, whether it's Chapman or the Mogambo and so on, I'm not sure that these newsletter writers actually understand the law and how the law applies, because they write in their newsletters and they complain as if they had rights and that the government is interfering with those rights, when in reality, they don't have those rights to begin with. So when you complain that the bank is turning over records and books and what you think is private and personal information to some government institution, that's just nonsense. You got two reporters over here that are now in the news, but they won't tell who their sources are. and they're relying upon freedom of the press under the First Amendment. They don't have freedom of the press. Those two reporters work for the Washington Post. Those two reporters work for a corporation that's regulated and governed under Hale versus Hinkle and Wickard versus Filburn. There is no rights for that corporation, and there are no rights afforded to those two reporters. They don't have a Fourth Amendment right to be protected or a First Amendment right. Corporations do not have rights. That's the end of the report. And that's what the Supreme Court said in Hale back in 1905. And they've upheld it from that day to this. And that's why Daniel Shore, way back in the 70s, over the, what the hell was that, papers that they leaked, the Pentagon Papers, caper, discovered. And that's what these boys are going to discover. And that's just where reality's at. Now, there is a thing called freedom of the press. And there are some people that have it. And George Gordon is one of them. I'm not incorporated, and under the First Amendment, I have a right to publish. I have a right to speak. I have a right to free speech. But I can't do that in a public forum. I can't affect trade, commerce, business, and industry while I'm exercising free speech. You can't be accepting a government benefit and then fail to be or object to being regulated and controlled by that government. Now, that's just where reality is. So when we talk about these newsletters, I want to emphasize that I'm all in favor, and I suggest that you subscribe to the International Forecaster. I think it's a dynamite publication. But when I read a paragraph like the geniuses at Bank of America tell us that they've lost computer tapes containing personal information on 1.2 million federal employees, I just say, so what? The 1.2 million federal employees gave that information to the bank. So obviously it wasn't very private, or they wouldn't have given it to the bank. You go to your doctor, and your doctor writes up some information, puts it on his computer. Did you know that there are computer programs out there that I can access all of your medical information? It's all up online. Did you know that? It cost me $1,650 to buy that program, and I can subscribe to the service. There isn't anything personal or private about going to a medical doctor. I know there's a lot of crap out there that talk to you about, you know, the confidentiality of a doctor and a patient, confidentiality of a lawyer and a client. And yes, it is true, there is some confidentiality there, but not a whole lot, not as much as you think there is. Now, Franklin Sanders publishes a newsletter, and I want to give you a plug here for old Frank. Franklin Sanders, now he's a little bit more on the order of gold and silver. He's actually a gold and silver broker, whereas the Mogambo, and I don't know if he does or not, but I'm presuming he doesn't sell gold and silver. At least he's never said so in his newsletters, and I don't think Chapman does either. I think they buy and sell gold through a broker, just like I do. I don't buy and sell gold. I'm not a broker. If I was going to be a gold broker, I'd be in public business. I have to deal in commercial paper. I have to have a bank account. I don't do that. I don't have a bank account. And furthermore, I can't have a bank account. And if I had a bank account, I'd be in public business. I'd have to be regulated and controlled by the government. I'd have to have a guardian. Since I don't want a guardian, and I think I've got capacity, don't need a guardian, I deal in gold and silver. And I know one of you guys is going to write me a letter, and you're going to say, well, smart pants, how do you buy things at Walmart with gold? Well, you know, believe it or not, partner, I do. When you go to school here, you'll pay me in gold, or you won't go to school here. And I'll take your gold, and I'll convert it to some other form, some other means of exchange, and I'll go to Walmart, and I'll buy something at Walmart. And as I pointed out earlier, just because you don't know how to use gold and silver, and you don't know how to exchange it for a medium of exchange that you can use at Walmart without triggering public business, does that mean that it can't be done because you don't know how? Or can I ask you, well, do you know everything in the world? Do you know half of everything in the world? Could it be that George Gordon knows one thing out of that one half of everything in the world that you don't know? Sometimes I get tired of ignorance and stupidity, but I have to point it out because as an educator, not everybody knows everything. So sit back and relax. As a matter of fact, if you stop and take charge, you probably really don't know very much. That's my conclusion. I don't know very much either. But what little bit that I do know, I'm pretty good at. Now, socialism is in our marketplace, and we Americans have adopted socialism. We practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. The second plank calls for a heavy progressive income tax. Americans file and pay heavy progressive income taxes. Second plank to the Communist Manifesto. What does that tell you? Well, you're one-tenth of a communist. The eighth plank calls for the formation of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. That's called Social Security in the vernacular. Everybody, most people, have a Social Security number. That makes you two-tenths of a communist. The fifth plank to the manifesto calls for a central bank. Most people do business with our central bank called the Federal Reserve, use Federal Reserve notes, have checking accounts and credit cards and so on. There's three. That's three-tenths of a communist. You know, you come to my school here and I'll sit you down and we'll talk about the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And I think when we get through with all 10 planks, you will be a person who is practicing all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. That makes you a communist. The basic problem that most Americans have is that they're practicing communists. Communism never worked well for anybody in the world that's tried it so far. It didn't work well in Russia. It hasn't worked well in China. And that's why they converted to the free market economy that they have today. They have a communist government with a free market economy. And God, they are just booming over there. I mean, they just can't build factories. They can't mine coal. They can't buy oil and steel fast enough to feed this burgeoning economy. They're growing at 7, 8, 9% a year. America used to grow like that when we had a free market economy. You know, after the Civil War, in that 35 years between 1865 and 1900, America had its golden age of growth. We built 186,000 miles of railroad in 35 years. We became the world's number one producer in a number of economic indicators. By 1950, we Americans were number one in all 15 leading economic indicators of industrial production. We Americans were number one in iron and steel. We produced 100 million tons in 1950. All the rest of the world combined produced 27 million tons. We produced 3.5 million automobiles, and all the rest of the world combined in 1950 produced 750,000. We produced more iron and steel and coal and automobiles and aluminum than anybody else in the world and consumed more. We were number one in everything. And today, in the year 2005, the United States of America is not number one in any, not a single one, of the 15 leading economic indicators of industrial production, including aircraft production, which was the last one that we were overtaken in by the European Airbus. They now build more commercial airplanes than we do. Now, things have changed here in America, and they've changed fundamentally because we have changed. We Americans turned our backs on the free market economy. What today is called the black market was called the free market, the market of supply and demand, that government does not interfere in the business or the workplace. Today, government interferes and controls the workplace. Government dictates to the corporations that it charters and controls what the safety equipment in automobiles is going to be. And thereby, they dictate to you what safety equipment that you're going to use in the automobile. And if you don't buckle your seatbelt, you're going to go to jail or be fined and punished. You do not decide. You do not have the capacity, you mental patients with driver's license. You don't have the capacity to decide for yourself whether or not you're going to buckle your seatbelt. You're going to buckle your seatbelt and shut up about it. And forget about having any free choice that you're going to decide for yourself what's good for you. Now, you know that as well as I do. And your rights to free choice have been severely limited. Now, if you'd like to expand those rights to free choice, oh, hey, listen, the whole world is out there, and our Constitution and Bill of Rights is still in full force and effect, and it still works. It works just as well as it did in 1787. And you can have all the freedoms, you can have all the benefits, and all of the profits that go with the freedom that comes from the free marketplace. But you have to practice what you preach. Practice what you preach. All right, we're just about out of time. I got to cut it off right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. Let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour and The Editorial Review. Now, for more information, all you have to do is go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Just go to the archive and you can pull this program, or any program, of which there are now thousands of them, by title and date. Just pull them off of there and copy them yourself. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, we're out of time. The signal is on. It says I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.